This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
How to even, just paint and get involved in a project that winds up being really big. One person or two people couldn't do it, but all of a sudden there's 30 people doing it, and it's just, it's mind-blowing all of the things that people can do when they get together like that. And so it happens for 10 days. During the day, there are opportunities for people to volunteer and to plug into these projects. And at night, we get together and we get nourished together, and then we learn together. There's speakers who have different specialties. And then we dance, and there's music, and we have a good time.
Very nice. How long has BBC been going on?
This is the 13th year, although when it first got started, it was known as the Natural Building Convergence. But we quickly realized that there was more than natural building going on, that we were actually transforming the city and changing people's life patterns for those 10 days into more of a village lifestyle. And so we changed the name to Village Building Convergence to reflect that.
About how many volunteers are involved each year?
Oh my gosh. Hundreds. Literally hundreds. And it's anything from, you know, school kids who are sometimes doing projects at their school or nearby where they are. Cobb building is neat because it's really accessible and just about anybody can do it. And people who are, families or older people, elderly folks are able to get involved. So in any one site, if it's a really large site, just in one day, there can be 40 or more volunteers. And this year we have about 30 sites across the city. And there's one in Vancouver as well, Vancouver, Washington. And that's not to count any of the volunteers who are coordinators who have been behind the scenes making this happen for the last 6 months. So a lot.
Yeah, and you said earlier before we were on the air that a lot of these volunteers are new this year. Mm-hmm. So what can a volunteer experience, or what can they expect to experience this year?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's really neat because a lot of intention is put into the experience of volunteers, because that's really, it's a volunteer-driven event, and it's all about going in and literally getting your hands dirty and having that experience of creating something, learning new skills, getting nourished together. Volunteers get fed at the sites, and making friends. And so an experience could be anything from, to get involved, a volunteer would just go to our website, vbc.cityrepair.org. If they wanted to get involved before the event, they would click get involved and volunteer, and then there's a form to fill out. But if they wanted to just show up at a site, next week we're going to have the schedule posted of all the sites and when volunteers are expected. And so a volunteer could just simply show up, sign a sheet saying I'm here, and then ask, how can I help? How can I get involved? And it can be anything from something that the volunteer might already have experience with and they want to lend their expertise, to something that the volunteer just simply wants to learn about. And they'd rather be guided a bit more, but want to step in. And so the types of things that volunteers could do or learn about would be, natural building, of course, learning how to construct Cobb structures like benches and outdoor classrooms and things like that, to learning about permaculture and learning about gardening. There are a lot of neighborhood gardens that can get constructed. There's also a lot of gathering spaces that get built. Some of them have things like kiosks where it's a free library, leave a book, take a book kind of thing. And there's also a lot of painting that happens in the streets. And I'm sure a lot of folks recognize those and have seen those. Those are usually the result of people in the neighborhood getting together, having a vision for what they wanted to put down in the street, getting an artist to take all of those different ideas and put them together into one design, and then they kind of lay it out, and then a volunteer could just simply come up and, grab a paintbrush and just start painting. And then a lot of times the volunteers who get involved, you know, they're having a good time, and when the work ends at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whatever, usually around 4 or sometimes earlier, they want to still hang out with the people that they've been working with. And so then they'll come to the central venue and get involved with the things that we have going on there, which I'm sure I'll talk about a little bit more later.
Yeah, and what is the overall goal of these kind of events, of I guess the neighborhood, the different neighborhood projects? What's the goal of those?
Do you mean from the neighbor's perspective or from City Repair's perspective?
From City Repair's perspective.
Okay. I'm sure they're pretty aligned, but it's a really deep question that you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different levels of what's happening. So on the one level, kind of the 10,000-foot level, is that you know, we all live in these really isolated spaces that, you know, the city is laid out in this kind of Roman grid, and we all feel very isolated from one another. And that's a very disempowering feeling. And, you know, the plazas and squares that we used to gather in and, you know, have markets and goods and things like that aren't so common. And the places where those used to be were the streets. You know, literally the crossroads where people would come together were where they would gather and meet and talk and play music and dance and get married and all of that stuff. And so really this is a reclaiming of the commons by the people. You know, we don't have anything against cars. We just don't think that they should, you know, have the rule of all of the commons. And so it's a way to sort of share those commons with all of the things that people would like to do together to build that community and to rebuild that sense of togetherness. And so that's why it's such a volunteer-run event. I mean, we could certainly, you know, become a for-profit organization that communities would consult and come in and build a professional thing for them. But then we would lose all of that coming together, learning skills, sharing things together, and the bonding that happens. And it's really amazing. Folks live 2-3 doors down from one another and don't know each other. And then all of a sudden, there's something happening in the neighborhood. They come together. They do something like this together. And all of those barriers just fall. And all of a sudden, you know, the extra stuff that they have in their garage that they're not using is available to the neighbor down the street. And this sharing, you know, kind of community resources thing is a lot simpler because people know each other and they build trust, and then that's the foundation of building community. So that's really the goal of what we're doing here.
Yeah, and so the event you've said is 10 days long, kind mm-hmm. of on, that's kind of like, I guess, on the surface level. But what's kind of left behind when the 10-day part is over?
The most important thing, all of the relationships that are built. I mean, sure, we make some beautiful art and we make benches, but, you know, you can point to a bench and say that's a bench. And although that's a really powerful thing, for instance, folks may know who Mark Lakeman is. He's a founder of City Repair, and he gives a presentation of varying lengths about why we do what we do. And I touched on some of it when I was telling you, you know, the goal of City Repair with this. But he mentions that along Sandy Boulevard, you know, from 7th Avenue where it starts all the way out to 330th, there's one bench to sit on, just simply to sit on. And that's crazy. You know, there are villages that organize their entire setup around making sure that the grandmothers have places to sit in between where they're, you know, tending the kids and dealing with the laundry and doing their day-to-day things. And so certainly, you know, the benches that are left behind are really important too, because they're places for folks to gather. And so the tangible things are places for people to gather, some kind of like an icon or something that's created out of the vision that folks have for what it looks like to live in a community where people care about one another and where people want to interact with one another. But I think, you know, after those are long crumbled, sometimes those relationships are still there. Some of the deepest relationships that I have in my life have come from people that I've met doing this kind of volunteer work with VBC. And so those are sort of the intangible or the kind of the invisible things that are left behind that I think are even more important than the structures that we build.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's all very awesome. I just want to remind our listeners that you can tell us your experience with VBC or ask any questions of Sid by calling 503-231-8187. So what is kind of the gestation period for this? You said that there's several months in advance that where people are planning,
mm-hmm.
or the supervisors are planning. How long, and what are kind of maybe some of the landmarks of that?
Well, I'll start with a landmark that's for the community, for your listeners. If anyone out there listening is interested in doing a project in their neighborhood, City Repair will, around November usually, will put out something called a request for proposals. So the event happens at the end of May, so this is 6 months before the event happens. And in the request for proposal, a community will get together and fill out a form saying, hey, we've been coming up with this idea. We're really excited. We would love to be a part of the VBC. And, here's our idea for what it might look like. And not everything is totally figured out necessarily by that point, but they at least have a pretty good idea, and there are a few people who are heading it up. So in order to be in a position to do that, usually there are some potlucks and some, getting together and some planning that might happen in a community in October or even beforehand. So we started meeting, the organizers of the event started meeting in October. And so I guess, it's an 8 month maybe gestation period for the organizers. We meet around October to really get a sense of, okay, what's the theme of the event going to be? Where might we have it? Are there any changes to how we normally do it that we want to really consider right now? And let's get together the request for proposals for communities. And then folks start submitting those, and then we review them. And usually by December, sometimes January, but usually by December, we have gone through them to really figure out who... what communities are likely to have everything that they need to get started, and how can we help the ones that maybe don't. And then in February, we have our first potluck, and it's for all of the different sites that have submitted proposals that are part of VBC, and we invite them all together and have them meet one another and tell each other their stories and just kind of start building those relationships. And so from February then, every week, every Thursday, placemaking sites attend workshops that we hold to have them to help them to learn all the different steps that it takes. And it's everything from dealing with the city and getting permitting to incorporating their neighbors and making sure that there's a lot of inclusion, to getting donations of food for volunteers who might help, and all of those steps.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had a question there.
Well, we kind of keep going a little bit from there too. Mm-hmm. That's all of the planning, and then, depending on what focus there is, depends on when they really need to get plugged in and get started. I mentioned before that people come from all over the world. I'm really excited. There's someone who's coming from Australia this year. And in order for her to get everything set up, she needed an address that she's going to stay at for her visa. She needed to know, and she just kind of needed to know things really early. And so we do have housing available for folks who are coming from, either out of town or they live far out and they want to be close in. And we have, and we're also, asking people to house people as well. There's a sign-up form on our website to do that. And in exchange, we give them free access to the central venue for the evening programming. And that's a really neat way to learn about people, too, and to build relationships. And either for folks who are hosting, they get to know these amazing people who are coming from so far away, doing really great things where they are, who want to come here and sort of cross-pollinate, teach us about what they know and learn from what we are doing. And then from the folks who are staying at a place, it's great because they really get to know some behind-the-scenes stuff. A lot of times the people who are offering the housing are people who are pretty deeply involved with VBC, and so it's a really neat kind of behind-the-scenes look at some of that information and some of those folks.
Yeah, when you're talking about some people, some of the neighborhoods or communities might needing help, I was wondering, too, do any of these projects require any kind of, like, city permission?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they definitely do. It's really kind of neat. So the way that City Repair got started was there was a community tea house down in Selwood, and it was on some property, and people, neighbors from all around, really loved coming there and sharing tea and kind of having it as a commons space. And when they were forced to take that tea house down, everybody kind of got together and were like, hey, you know, who gets to decide what our neighborhood is like? You know, I mean, it seems weird that the city should get to decide what our neighborhood is like when we're the ones who live here. And so they all got together and sort of painted their street without permission. And that was how it started. And then the city showed up and said, hey, you can't beautify your neighborhood. You don't have a permit. And they said, well, that's true. We don't have a permit. But I wonder if it isn't, if we're not accomplishing a lot of the goals that the city has by doing what we're doing. And they're like, well, but you didn't ask us. And they said, okay, but now we're asking you. And they kind of collaborated and came to an agreement and an understanding that became an ordinance that is the intersection repair ordinance that permits the painting that happens in the city and in the streets. And then, you know, fast forward a few years, and we created the city's first covered bike shelter for people to lock up their bikes. And Mayor Tom Potter showed up to that and was like, this is amazing. I can't believe that this is the first time we've done this. From here forward, there will be no permitting fees for any VBC projects. And so the relationship deepened. And, you know, there are folks in Portland Bureau of Transportation who go out of their way to set up meetings for people who are doing these projects to get permits. And they set aside their time on three separate days leading up to VBC in order for folks to, you know, meet with them, find out all the things they need to do to get all the ducks in a row to have the permitting work out so that the city knows that people are safe and the people know that the city is approving what they're doing so they're not going to get in trouble or it's not going to get torn down or what have you. And it's become quite a partnership, and it's quite beautiful, really.
We have a caller on the line. Spring, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Shara, you are so beyond an intern that please always stay on KBOO.
Thank you.
So I'm calling because of, let's say, long-term life. And I'm in my 60s now. And being a Portlander, I've had a few jobs. And in the 90s, I front office managed at Harry's Mother, where I first met had fun with, and the tea house and everything with Mark Lehman. Great guy. And I wish he would run again for city council, just about anything. But, you know, I look forward to voting for Mark again. And just a big shout out for VBC, always coming up. And all of you, it's all good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Spring.
Thank you. Ciao, Bella.
If you have any comments like Spring, the number is 503-231-8187. Again, you're listening to Positively Revolting, and I'm here this morning with Sid from VBC. Sid, you said that there were different themes
mm-hmm.
at some point. So is there a theme for this year?
There is. It's a really fun one.
Oh.
So, and it's in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know how, like, sometimes a book will have the first title and then there'll be a colon and then there'll be the second title?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we did for our theme this year. So the first title, or the first theme, is urban succession. And in permaculture, succession is a really important concept. And so we're thinking about the permaculture concept of succession, not necessarily like the succession of thrones or something like that. And so it's an idea where things are changing and shifting in a way that is more in alignment with how we might want to live and the rhythms of our lives and how they could interrelate and be a little bit more connected to the place where we live, rather than, you know, like typically a person lives in the residential district and then they drive their car to the industrial district or the business district, and then you know, then they drive over to the commercial district and they buy their groceries, and then they drive home, and then they go downtown for the fun district, and then, or wherever the fun district is, and then they come back home, and you know, a lot of times all of the things that, you know, if a person is a roofer and they go downtown to work for a firm that does that, if they look around, their neighbors probably have roofs that need fixing too. And, you know, their neighbors probably have or can grow food that they could share. And, you know, a lot of the things that we take for granted, that, you know, things have always been this way. And, of course, you have to drive 20 miles to go to work and come back home. And, you know, a lot of those patterns are shifting and changing. And the more, you know, the price of gas increases, you know, the more people are looking for having things happen more locally. And so that's part of the concept of urban succession. And then the second title, or the second theme, is Shift and Sprout.
Nice.
And so that's really fun, because it, you know, it sort of evokes people doing a funny dance where you twist your hips around, and the idea that things are shifting and then sprouting and then shifting and then sprouting, and that's kind of what urban succession looks like.
Very nice. And who should we be? You talked about some of these people coming in from overseas and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Who should we be looking out for at this year's fest, as far as, and maybe like what events should we be looking out for if we're interested in the learning aspect? And I'll go ahead and to give you this to look up a couple.
Okay, well, I need to pull something up, so
yeah.
could you maybe explain your question a little bit?
Yeah. So I'm just thinking that there's probably some people coming from overseas, and I was just wondering, well, I guess I wonder too what their participation is. Are they involved with the speaking aspect? Because I know there are a couple musicians and speakers, so maybe if there are any particular of those that are interesting.
Well, there are folks who are coming from overseas, from the UK, from Australia, and so on, but they're really coming just to volunteer and to help.
Oh, wow.
And there's one person who is a community organizer where she lives, and she's coming to learn about what we do. She's really motivated and inspired by what we do, and motivated and inspired by what she does that she'd like to share with us. And then there's another fellow from the UK who's going to be, he does a lot of documentary work, and he's going to be documenting the BBC and the stories and the people who make it all happen. And so we've been collaborating on how best to do that. One of the things that we're doing this year that's really kind of neat is VBC is finally coming into the 21st century, and we are getting involved with helping people to share things in a way that people can see what's going on. So using hashtags, for instance, if people take a photo and they have Instagram, they can upload it. If they use the proper hashtags, then anyone who's looking for that can know that things are happening. So our event has a hashtag. It's VBC13 or VBC13. And then we're doing a hashtag for each neighborhood that a project site is happening in. Some people know the neighborhoods they're in. Some people don't. But it's a good way to search by location. So, for instance, the Buckman composting site will have the hashtag BBC13 and then the hashtag Buckman, because that's the name of the neighborhood. And then finally, we're using hashtags for the types of projects that people are doing. So natural building, intersection painting, gathering spaces, and neighborhood gardens. So that's one of the ways that people can find out about what things are happening. And people who are taking images and photos can upload in that way, so people can know about it. And that's one this fellow who's going to be documenting things, he's going to be doing that. As far as the events, one thing that I think people should know is that we are coming to the Northeast this year. You know, in the past, we've gone, you know, maybe just north of Burnside with Disjecta, or when we were at the temple on Burnside and 28th or so. But we're going to be on Alberta, 126 Northeast Alberta. It's called the Alberta Abbey. That's where our central venue is going to be. And it's a renovated church that a couple of folks own and are turning into a community center. It's a really beautiful space. That's one thing that's different this year. You know, we've been in the Southeast. We were at St. David's of Wales Episcopal Church for the last couple of years. And so it'll be different if people are expecting it to be in the same place. You know, they should go to the website and see where it's at. They're on Northeast Alberta. Another thing that we're doing differently this year that is really cool is we're decentralizing some of the evening fun. So it used to be that everyone would go out to the sites and then converge to the central venue every night. And this year there are three nights where we're doing things out in the community in the evening. So on Sunday, May 26th at the Sunnyside School, there's going to be a big community gathering there, right by the Sunnyside Piazza, close to Southeast 33rd and Yamhill. And there will be music, there will be painting, there will be, I believe, Singing Alive, which is a really cool sort of tribal singing experience that's it's really great. There will be food, music, dancing, all kinds of things happening on that Sunday. And I think that's from like 4 o'clock to 9 or 9:30 or 4:30 to 9 or something like that. I think it's 4:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then on Tuesday, we are going to be doing, I don't know if folks are familiar with Community Supported Everything and Sam Smith, but they've been doing silent discos for a while. And KBOO has been helping with the broadcast during the silent discos.
Actually, Sam Smith was the guest on the show. He's one of the guests, and Community Supported Everything were the guests on the show last week.
Oh, very cool. So your listeners probably know about that.
A little bit. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fun. So a silent disco or a silent dance party is something where KBOO is broadcasting this, you know, awesome dance music.
The Melting Pot.
The Melting Pot. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the show. And so Sam and Community Supported Everything has all of these headphones that are set up so that people can listen. And so, you know, you might come across a whole bunch of people with headphones dancing and you can't hear any music. And you're like, what's going on? It seems like you guys are having a lot of fun, but I feel like I'm not a part of it. And you walk up and someone's like, oh, hey, would you like a set of headphones? And you're like, yeah. And then all of a sudden you're part of it and you're dancing too. And so so that's going to be happening on Tuesday night. And it's kind of a decentralized dance party. And that'll be really fun. And then the last night that's going to be different is on Thursday, is last Thursday, and it's on Alberta. It'll be right down the street. And the T-Horse and a lot of different things from City Repair's past are going to be there at last Thursday, and there'll be folks you know, doing art and interactive pieces. There'll be music and ways for people to get involved there, and that should be really fun. Otherwise, things will be happening at the central venue, and I could go over the schedule of events. Is there a caller, or?
There is. Let me see. It is Marie. Marie, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Okay, and congratulations on your new work. You're doing a great job, and you have a beautiful radio voice.
Oh, thank you so much. So do you.
Okay, so I have a list here. I'm new. I'm relatively new to the building convergence idea, although I've been listening on cable radio for probably 3 years to it, but it's still kind of coming into focus for me. So I wrote down some ideas. I'm a little bit actually electronically sensitive, and some of these ideas I wrote down, they may already have been incorporating them for even 10 years or 5 years, but I thought it's worth throwing them all out, and I'm also kind of try to be a new kind of thinker. So I thought I'd throw all these ideas out, and maybe in the future some of these can happen. And I have this little list here. I hope that's okay with you all. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right. So one of my ideas of the building convergence is that maybe in the future in our outlying areas we can have some of those ideas. For example, we could have building convergence that is like a Friday and Saturday night, almost a permanent event or a permanent summer event. For example, at our nearby community garden, we could have bilingual sing-alongs. And our community garden is known to be bilingual. So that's just one idea of having singing events at the garden. And I'm going to progress with my other ideas, okay?
You said your community garden, where is that at?
It's in Hood River.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Okay, now let me just read my list. And I know other people may call in, so I don't want to digress too much. But so the first idea is let building convergence continue permanently on weekends. Maybe we can grow up to that. Wouldn't be once a year, but it would be a continuous thing. And then a few other ideas is I have a dream in terms of city repair, repairing the city, that someday we could have whole solar neighborhoods, and that could be our goal of building the neighborhoods. And, of course, the ideal would be the poorest neighborhoods there, start with solar there. And then a few other ideas are that I'm in this petrochemical crisis that we're in and the new crisis with the Canadian issue, that our roads are often constructed of petrochemicals. And I know in the Roman era, I believe they were actually bricks. It may have been something similar to cob. So maybe someday our roads could actually be made of some type of cob brick. And then along that line, I've been very mercury sensitive, and that's why I'm electronically sensitive. I'm right now avoiding computer, but there's a high amount of mercury in sidewalks. So maybe we can have someday new sidewalks. They do not contain mercury. That's kind of continuation of the new road idea. So it's like the, I forgot that word you used, but anyway, it's a thing of sprouting out of new roads, new sidewalks. Then two more ideas is that, you know, we have our crisis of TriMet with the prices going up of the buses. And my dream is that we could also have little bus systems and have little buses everywhere and really reduce cars on the road. And then two more things that I'm done, okay, and I'll try to hurry in case anyone else calls in. Okay. I'm also very sensitive to Wi-Fi, and my dream is that at some of these building convergence meetings, we could have Wi-Fi free ones, and not very many people are aware of that, but some people are actually very sick from Wi-Fi. Okay, and then here's my climax. Here's my creme de la creme, okay? All right. My climax is I've been calling at the cable about the Guantanamo situation. I've been saying, you know, we cannot all fast, and we cannot do a total fast, but we could be sugar-free in solidarity with Guantanamo. So here's my creme de la creme. Maybe someday we can have sugar-free neighborhoods.
That's very nice.
Of course, it'd have to be a fruit-rich neighborhood. So I want to end with a very wonderful, creative idea.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for all your work, and KBOO is the best. Thank you for both of you and all your work.
Thank you. So, Sid, if someone has some ideas like Marie here, where mm-hmm. should they direct those ideas?
Well, I mean, the best way to have ideas is to be part of implementing those ideas. So they would contact us at VBC. So there's an vbc@cityrepair.org and see about getting involved. And, you know, the planning committee, like we were talking about before, starts meeting 8 months before the event.
Mm-hmm.
So, but some of the things that she was talking about are more neighborhood-related things, like, hey, could we do something here in Hood River, and how could we be involved? And, you know, that's something that, you know, we have people who want to get involved with what we're doing, and they contact us year-round, and they ask for support and advice. And we're, you know, on the one hand, we are a totally volunteer-run, you know, organization. We have, like, one part-time office coordinator that we pay, and everything else is volunteer. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of bandwidth for helping everybody everywhere, but we are starting to build up some ideas for how to progress what we're doing here into a format that people can use where they are, because not everybody lives in a city where the city council is like, hey, I love what you guys are doing, and we want to support it. You know, I don't know what it's like in Hood River. I mean, I've been out there, and it's beautiful. It's farther east, and so it gets darker earlier. and everybody goes to bed earlier and wakes up earlier, but I don't know about the city. So, you know, starting a dialogue with us about how, you know, how could we start doing this out there, because they certainly wouldn't need, you know, VBC to come out where they are to have singing happen in their garden. You know, the way that would happen would be to start having, you know, some potlucks and inviting people, and then start floating the idea, and then seeing how the idea changes and morphs the more people get involved. A lot of times, if a person starts that process, then the more people get involved, all of a sudden it's not just singing, it's like music and dancing and other things that they may not have planned for. But now all the people that they need to make it happen are part of it, and they're invested too, because it's part of their idea. So, you know, those types of things can happen. And as far as things like, you know, using Cobb for like roads or for, you know, sidewalks, I don't know. You know, we haven't tried that before, but it'd be certainly interesting. And it's something that, you know, on a local neighborhood's scale, perhaps they could start talking with, you know, with us, with other natural builders, and with the city, to see if they could do a test pilot project and see how it worked. You know, I think it's really great to think outside of the traditional ways that things have happened, and I think it's really great for communities to own that. I mean, when sidewalks and roads are built, you know, the city is paying for it out of tax dollars. So if local people are raising the money to do a test or pilot project where they live, that means that the city doesn't have to pay for that. So maybe there's some incentive there. I don't know. But it's fun. It's fun to hear those ideas and to hear the excitement that people have for changing their community and where they live in a way that fits with their ideals and values.
What are some of the difficulties about transforming a place where people live?
Well, I guess the first difficulty to overcome is how separate we are from each other and how alienated we are. You know, you can't just go changing the neighborhood without having the neighborhood behind you. You know, so the first process is really to just overcome the fear of not knowing people and to reach out and to, you know, knock on doors, start having potlucks and getting people to know one another. And the next step really is, you know, how do we come up with an idea? And, you know, we talk about that. We have a placemaking guidebook, that we print and sell. And it talks about some of the ideas for how to do this whole process. But, you know, this next step is really just like a design charrette, and you have people brainstorm. And it's just the difficulty there sometimes is, like, you know, people want to make it practical right away. But really, in the brainstorming part, it's just about having ideas and being as creative as possible. You know, like the ice cream streets, and, you know, skateboards made out of, you know, flying dogs, or, you know, I mean, whatever, you know, all of that is good in the brainstorming process, because then you reach solutions and ideas that you never would if you were trying to be practical from the outset. And then the difficulty is trying to come up with something practical out of all of these ideas. But you'd be surprised at how, like, simply things start flowing once the process gets started. And then really it's just about getting the neighbors on board. You know, sometimes, you know, a neighbor is not really excited, either because they don't feel included, because they already feel really alienated, and so they have this kind of us-them mentality that's hard to break through. But it still presents this opportunity for them to connect with their neighbors and to get involved. Even if the way that they're connecting is to say, I don't really like what you're doing and I don't really want that on my street, then all of a sudden they were empowered to have a decision about what happened where they lived. Even if that, you know, empowered decision was to say no, that's still a benefit. That's still a bonus. Just, you know, they're really, I mean, along this process, there's really not, there's no failure. You know, there's just different steps along the way, because it's really all about, you know, coming together, getting to know people's neighbors, realizing that they're empowered to choose what the community could be like and to start making those decisions. And to even get to the point where someone has said no, they've already had so much success that it's, you know, it's really hard to look at that in a negative light, even though people might be attached to the outcome. You know, some of the other difficulties are just, getting the design and the vision that they have to line up with, you know, city permitting and to line up with what other folks might want to do. Kind of like I was saying before, where a person has this idea and like, I know, we're going to have a skate park, it's going to be blue, and it's going to be 20 by 20, and they have these very specific ideas. But in order to get people involved, they have to ask other people what they would like to see. And so letting go of the attachment to exactly how it's going to be can be difficult, but then it turns into a really beautiful collaboration once that happens.
I think you pointed out some really great stuff. I like the idea that having a say, even if that's not a you know, going toward what, you know, the ultimate goal of one person is, that's really nice.
Yeah. Would you like me to go back over the, I was getting ready before we had a caller, I was going to go over what some of the programming was going to be at the central venue?
Oh, sure, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So the Village Building Convergence happens from May 24th to June 2nd. And so the first evening on May 24th, that's a Friday, at the central venue, there's going to be, let's see, it starts at 5 o'clock. The venue opens up at 5. Mm-hmm. And then we have dinner from 5:30 to 6. This is kind of the schedule every night at the central venue. So 5:30 to 6:30 or so. So for about an hour, we'll get nourished together. It's usually really amazing food. We have an awesome food coordinator and nourishment coordinator this year. And she's been involved with City Repair for a long time. Folks might know Sarah. She's kind of amazing. And then we'll have some announcements and kind of let people know what's going to be happening that night. And then from 7 o'clock until later, we have our guests and our speakers and our music. So on Friday, the 24th, there will be Matt Bebo. He's the executive director of Mother Earth School. He's been involved with Village Building Convergence and City Repair for a really long time. And he's going to be giving a presentation called The 13th Run, City Repair's Community Work Over the Years, that'll give people some insight into what City Repair has been doing since they started. And I think a lot of people are curious about that. I know you had asked that question earlier, and I kind of touched on it. But there's a lot of pieces to it, so that'll be a really good night for people who are interested in that. And then after that, Mark Tobin and Mark Lakeman are going to be presenting Patterns of Place and Cosmos, which will be a really neat presentation. It's from concept to integration with self and community, so the interrelation between a person and the community they live in. Mark Tobin is the director of Rising Vision, and Mark Lakeman is the director of Communitecture, and he's the co-founder of City Repair and the co-founder of the Planet Repair Institute. And then that night, there will be music, a couple of different bands. There'll be Tim Snyder and the Sound Society, and then Jenna Love. So that's all happening on Friday, which seems like, you know, there's a lot going on. It's kind of, you know, tickets are $15, and for $15, people get fed. You know, they learn things from the presenters, and then there's music. So we really try to make it accessible and a pretty good deal.
What does the money ultimately go toward?
Well, you'd be surprised at how much it costs to put this on. We help sites with materials for paint. We help with you know, getting sand and clay and straw. But you know, it also requires a lot of support and education. So you know, we're teaching people about the process as they go through. We're you know, scheduling things with the city. We're providing volunteers. And then there's a lot of things with the central venue. So, you know, the speakers who come and speak, we're paying them. The musicians who come, we're paying them. The food that people eat, we're paying for that. So in order to deliver all of the materials to the sites, we have to rent a truck and drive them around for a week. So those are the types of things that that it winds up paying for. And, you know, we wind up breaking even. We're really happy that we're able, I mean, to do the amount of work we're doing across the city for the amount of money that it's costing is like kind of amazing, because when we started out, we were doing this event, and there were maybe, you know, three sites, and then there were five sites. And the budget hasn't really changed much now that we have 30 sites. So we're figuring out how to do things on less money, but more built on what we call social capital, or the relationships that we have. There are a lot of really amazing people and businesses and companies and organizations that love what we do, that feel aligned with what the Village Building Convergence is about. And so they help us make it happen by, you know, donating materials or by cutting the cost or, you know, Miller Paint for a long time has been giving us 50% off of all the paint that people use to, you know, paint the streets. Things like that are how we make it happen on such a low budget.
Very nice. I wanted to remind everybody you're listening to Positively Revolting on KABU. And coming up this morning on KABU at 9 on Voices of the Middle East, host Gudars interviews Dr. Omar Dai about the latest on the situation in Syria. His research and teaching interests are in economic development and international trade with an emphasis on Middle East and North Africa. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a recent talk by noted scholar Noam Chomsky on the Middle East. At 11, The Digital Divide features an interview with Brad Smith, executive director of the upcoming event Web Visions, and The Guardian and the Freedom of Press Foundation. We broadcast Bradley Manning's statement during his recent court-martial hearing. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for this community radio station. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Also, there's a protest against drone attacks today organized by Head, Heart, Hands, Spirit, Code Pink, PDX, and Portland, WILPF. It is today and every Friday from noon to 2 p.m. in Portland's Pioneer Courthouse Square. Meet on the east side of the square, Southwest 6th, at the milepost marker, midway between north-south between Southwest Morrison and Yamhill Street. So if someone wanted to look up the event schedule, where would they find that at?
Sure. They would just go to the website, which is vbc.cityrepair.org. And on the right-hand side, towards the top, there are all the different tabs. And the one that is for the evening schedule, I think it says, like, evening schedule 2013 or something like that. Let's see what it says. Evening Events 2013. So it lists what's happening each and every night. I know you were asking before, like, what are some of the difficulties that people sometimes run into? And I was talking about that first night. So one of the things sometimes is, you know, how do you have a conversation with all of your neighbors? And how do you make your neighbors feel included? And how do you incorporate all these different ideas that sometimes seem conflicting into something that winds up being collaborative and cohesive? And that can be tough, you know, and that takes some different types of facilitation skills. And so the person, Mark Tobin, there that the first night, he's really skilled in facilitation, and he's been doing facilitation trainings and things for a long time. And so one of the things that City Repair has realized is that we need to help communities have these kinds of conversations. So he and I have been doing facilitation trainings in the community. We're actually doing one on Saturday at PSU from noon to 4 in the Smith Hall. And if people are interested in that, they can contact us. They can contact me, sid@cityrepair.org, and we can let them know how to get involved with that. So it's just kind of a way to learn the skills that it takes to bring a lot of different people together into a conversation and have everybody feel heard and take the bits and pieces of differing, sometimes conflicting information and turn it into kind of a collaborative woven whole. That's a really beautiful thing, too. I think that's one of the really neat things that happens at BBC is all of these different people with different ideas wind up collaborating on the same thing and feeling really connected instead of separate because of the different ideas.
So I know these events are happening in different neighborhoods. Is one of your goals to, I guess, or maybe not goals, but has it happened that these events are taking place in different neighborhoods every year? Or are some of these events in the same neighborhood every year? How does that work out, I guess?
Right. Well, it's interesting. There are some sites that have been sites for years and years and years. You know, the Sunnyside Piazza is one of the most famous ones, and it happens pretty much every year. But you're right that new sites pop up all the time. You know, I mentioned there's one in Vancouver. One that I think is really cool this year is Right to Dream 2. Folks may not know who that is or what that is, but when Occupy happened in 2011, around the same time, there was a property owner who was allowing folks who didn't have a place to live on his property. And so they've really set that place up pretty nice. They have a little fence of doors around it, and they've been doing a really good job of, you know, keeping that place really feeling like they've been really rooting there. And the city is sort of angry at them because it's not zoned for residential. And so, you know, they showed up and, hey, what are you doing? You can't solve your homeless problem without us. And they're like, but we, you know, if you get out of our way, we are already doing it. And so they're doing a placemaking project this year, and they're going to be creating a food forest up the side of some doors that they're going to stack, and it's going to be really cool. So you know, that's a brand new site, and I think it's great. You know, they're taking the space that they live and turning it into the place that they live, and that's what VBC is all about. And you know, they're kind of on the edge there. You know, they're sort of exploring the edge of what does it mean to be in a city? What does it mean to root in a place? And what does it mean to challenge the system, but really just solving their own problem? You know, maybe the system can move around to accommodate what they're doing. In the same way that it did when we were first starting what we were doing. So, you know, there are new sites that pop up every year, and we really are excited about that, and we really welcome that. And sometimes, you know, there are things that are happening at the same time in different parts of the city, and people have to kind of choose where they're going to go or what they're going to do. But ultimately, it's all fun. It's all awesome.
Yeah. Is there anything that you'd like to add that we haven't talked about so far?
Just that... I'm really excited to see people come out this year. There's going to be a documentary shot of VBC. Living Mandala is going to be shooting a video of all the sites. And so folks will have a chance to purchase that video. They're doing an Indiegogo campaign during the VBC, and so that's something we're really excited about. Really, it's about getting involved. So volunteering, showing up at a site, you know, helping out with the coordination, or just any way that people can get involved. It's really fun, and, you know, you'll make friendships that could last, you know, much longer than the things that you wind up creating.
Sounds very, very lovely. I did have one other question. I know you talked about some of the bands that are coming, mm-hmm. and I was kind of wondering, how do you select the musicians that come to this event?
Oh, that's a good question. A lot of times we have, you know, bands that are really excited to play for us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll go out and seek it out. And, you know, we have a really big, vast community. And sometimes the people that we want to play can't play and so on. So we have a committee of volunteers who make those decisions. And, you know, I'm not really sure what criteria they used this year. I know they had a specific budget, and they had to stay within that, and it was really kind of a small budget, and so it's really hard. You know, we'd like to pay bands a whole lot of money, and sometimes we have to pick and choose based on our budget, and sometimes we pick and choose based on the values of the band. We try and change it up and have different kinds of music, from, you know, like folk music to electronica music to you know, more dancey music or hip-hoppy type music to like bluegrass style, like, you know, just all kinds of different types of music. We try to spread that around. So a lot of different criteria goes into choosing who the bands are.
Sounds fun. The kind of bands that make you want to spring and...
Shift and sprout,
Shift and sprout.
Definitely danceability is important.
There you go. Well, I wanted to thank our engineer, Mike Hoffman, and also to Welcome back, Ani and Lynn. They're coming. Our normal hosts are going to be coming back next week. They've been in Mexico enjoying some sun, although we've been getting plenty of sun while they're gone. They're probably going to get back, and it's going to be typical Portland weather, I'm sure. But, yeah, if you enjoyed the show this morning, I encourage you to like us on Facebook. That's Positively Revolting. You can also follow us on Twitter. The handle is Positive Revolt. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, and have a good morning.
Community Radio and Proper Villain Productions are co-sponsoring the 4th annual Portland's Prom, the prom you wish you'd had, where the punch will already be spiked and curfew extends past midnight. Portland's Prom will happen on Saturday, May 18th, at the Star Theater in Portland. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. This event is a benefit for Planned Parenthood. Participants must be 21 plus. Entertainment is provided by Just People, Excellent Gentlemen, Worth, and Dimitri. More information can be found online at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
Join us for More Talk Radio this Monday at 8 a.m. when our guest will be Evgeny Morozov, author of To Save Everything, Click Here, The Folly of Technological Solutionism.
We will discuss the trade-offs that come with the ease and efficiency of technology and explore the shape of society in the digital age.
That's this Monday, May 13th at 8 a.m. on More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:02 a.m. Coming up on Voices of the Middle East, host Gudars interviews Dr. Omar Dahi about the latest situation in Syria. His research and teaching interests are in economic development and international trade with an emphasis on the Middle East and North Africa. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, featuring headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a recent talk by noted scholar Noam Chomsky on the Middle East. And at 11, The Digital Divide features an interview with Brad Smith, executive director of the upcoming event Web Visions. And from The Guardian and the Freedom of the Press Foundation, we broadcast Bradley Manning's statement during his recent court-martial hearing. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for this community radio station. If you are not a member, You can become one by going to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for Voices of the Middle East with your host, Gudarz.
Welcome to another installment of the Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudarz Ekhtedari, your host. As you might have followed us, we have produced this program. I mean, I have produced this program for almost 13 years, shortly after 9/11, 2001. And with this program, I just wanted to let everybody know that there is a possibility that this program may come to an end soon because of a moving situation that I may face because of a job opportunity that requires me to relocate. And if that happens, probably the June show would be the last show of Voices of the Middle East. I wanted to share that with you as my guests and listeners. Today, again, as usual, in the past decade or so, I've always tried to reach the voices that are normally not represented in the media, or at least in the mainstream media. And most of my guests in the past 13 years have been either professors of Middle East studies or people who have intimately associated with the issues and have knowledge, insight to the problems in the Middle East. And unfortunately, the problems in the Middle East are not anything that would end anytime soon. My guest today is Dr. Omar Dahi. He's a professor of economics at Hampshire College. He received his PhD in economics from University of Notre Dame, and he does research and teaching around economic development and international trade with a special focus on South-South economic cooperation and on the political economy of the Middle East and North Africa. Dr. Dahi is an affiliate of School of Critical Social Inquiry at New Hampshire College. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dahi.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
It's a great pleasure to speaking with you. Obviously, the situation in Syria is fast changing, and it's very dynamic.